So let's welcome Daniel Esteves for our last talk for today. Yes, this will also conclude the Radio Dev Room 2025. I would say, Daniel, the stage is yours.
Thank you. Sorry that the only thing standing between you and your dinner is me rambling about high-performance SDR runtimes in embedded systems. But since I'm going to speak about radio 3.8, 3.10, sorry, 4.0, future SDR, and perhaps a new SDR runtime I'm developing, I would like to begin with this joke. It's a mandatory quote from SKCD, right? So the story goes like this. Last summer, I was doing a project for GNU Radio 4.0, which was kind of kicking the tires and trying to make a packet modem radio using 4.0. And through that, I got quite familiar with how 4.0 works. I've been using GNU Radio 3 for a long time also, so I could compare between the two. I've also been interested in future SDR since it launched, really, because I like developing in Rust, but I've never used it before engaging on this project. So I was kind of interested in comparing all these three SDR frameworks, and I was really thinking, well, which is the one I should use? Which is the best, right? I was asking these kind of questions to myself. And of course, this is a silly question because it's not a technical question that you can answer, and SDR runtimes are just tools. So maybe for different problems, you should use different tools. And so the more technical question I ask myself is about performance. So if I want to have a really fast SDR framework or SDR runtime, what are the things I should do, and what are the things I should not do because they cost so much performance? And as I said, I wanted to look at these three SDR runtimes because they are the ones I am more interested in and probably the most popular, I think, right now. And when I was thinking about all these runtimes, I realized they look the same. And here you have GNU Radio Companion. This is only available in 3.10, really, or the GNU Radio 3 series. But you can do the same thing with code on the other runtimes. You write a flow graph. But that's not what I mean. What I mean by they all look the same is not the blocks. So there's a graph. But I mean the arrows. And this is like a stupid thing to say. But here what we draw as an arrow is a circular buffer, which is connecting the blocks. So right, the connections in the graph are circular buffers. Usually there are single producer, multiple consumer, because you want to fan out. This noise source could go to multiple blocks downstream. And that's how this works. And I was starting to think, well, I know a way to do differently. Maybe it's not better, but it's different. And perhaps it does well in some respects. So the disadvantages of using these circular buffers for the connections are these two. The first is, if you look at this multiply constant block, its work function has an input buffer, it has an output buffer, and it's moving the data from the input to the output and multiplying by 42. And what happens is, for this block to be very, very fast, you need both the input data and the output data to be in L1 cache. You could multiply in place, right? Multiplying by 42 is a simple operation. You could have a single buffer, which is your input and your output, and you put it there. But by having separate input and output buffers, you are effectively reducing the size of the cache that this block can work with by half. So that's one thing. And the other thing is transmit latency. And I always point people to the same talk Matt Edus gave at GRCon, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years back, where he considered the following problem. If I have, instead of the null sync, an SDR sync, which is consuming data at a certain rate, and I have a bunch of blocks, so I have like a long chain of blocks, what happens is the way that back pressure works in this kind of system is because buffers get full. So when you have many blocks, you have many buffers between all these blocks, and that drives your transmit latency up. And if I were to change at some point this 42 by any other number, I might see the end effect at my RF output couple seconds afterwards. And that's something that happens with 3.10. It's something that can happen with 4.0. So it's like some challenge that maybe this buffer approach is not good to control latency and to have something which you can control and define latency on transmit flow graphs. So my alternative idea was to send samples in packets. Rather than have like a continuous stream which is realized by circular buffers, you send them in packets. And the idea is you make a circuit of packets. Why do you make a circuit? So the thing is you have some fixed number of packets which are constructed at the beginning of the flow graph and they are allocated and they get recycled. So let's say we have just one packet. So it will be one packet. First is on this noise source. It uses the packet to write its output. Then the packet goes here. It's going to multiply in place by 42 because we want to do things in place as much as possible. And then it goes to the null sink, which doesn't do anything. And then the packet goes back to the noise source so that it can generate more noise and write it on the packet. And rather than having just one packet in the circuit, you can have multiple of them. And you can have these blocks on different threads working at the same time on different packets. So this is the idea. And I'm not going to say this is new. This is not really new. The advantages are many blocks can work in place on a packet. And so you are effectively making more use of your CPU cache. Latency is determined by the number of packets you have on a circuit. That's really trivial. If I only put four packets on the circuit, transmit latency is going to be, at maximum, the time it takes to transmit four packets through the final sink, right? Also, something else. As I was working with packet modems, not only in the 4.0 project, but elsewhere, I was realizing that many RF protocols have packets, even if they don't have like a packetized nature, they have sections or frames. And oftentimes, you need to mark those with tags. You might need to align your work functions to the tags. So something good about packets is that maybe they can be more natural when dealing with this kind of data. So there's potentially less need for tags and these kinds of things. It is also more similar to a handcraft implementation. If I told you, write this for me from scratch in any language you want, you would probably have like one single buffer maybe, and then you pass the buffer to a noise generator function, and then pass the buffer to a multiply constant function which works in place, and then you're done. And if I tell you I want it multi-threaded, maybe you have several buffers for the noise source, a multiply constant to be able to work at the same time on multiple buffers, right? So this packet I've been calling in quotation marks, I want to call it a quantum. First, because it's cool, people get excited about quantum physics or anything physics related. I know this is not the only use of quantum in SDR applications, but anyhow. And there are also two serious reasons for calling quantum. The first is that if I were to call this packet, there are packets elsewhere, because packet is a heavily overloaded term. You have multiple protocol layers. Each of them has their own concept of packet, L1, L2, etc. And if your SDR is an IP SDR, which is network connected, it also has like UDP packets. So let's not call this thing again a packet, because that's very confusing. And the second reason is, well, the inspiration for this is the idea is not to consider samples as a continuous stream of data, but rather to chunk it up in packets. It's the same as with energy in quantum physics, right? You have these photons, which are the quanta in which energy can be transmitted. So it's kind of the same thing. And a quantum contains a buffer with flexible margins. And I want to explain these margins with an example. So think about computing and adding a CRC. Can you do that in place? Well, no, because you need to grow the size of the packet. But if you know beforehand that you want to add a CRC, then you can prepare your buffer so that it has some extra capacity at the end, and then you can do it in place by growing the buffer. This is like the difference in C++ between a vector size and a capacity. if you design your capacity right from the start, then you can grow your packets by some postamble or preamble. So you have like the left margin and the right margin to be able to add things like a synchronization word or a header to the beginning without reallocation or going to the different buffer. And you can also strip those down. So when you receive, if you say, I'm no longer interested on the header, you just say the margin now is somewhere else. So that's the idea. You can also have tags in here, marking anywhere which is of interest within the packet, and perhaps other metadata. Here I have a more complex example flow graph. This is not a real application, but it's like a realistic looking application. And what is different between this flow graph and the previous one is two things. First, in here there's a block which is doing a decimation by two. And in here I have a fan out connection. So I have a one output, two inputs. How do we deal with this? The idea is to go like this. So let me explain before how I deal with decimation. So what we do is, if I want to decimate by two, then it's no longer reasonable to do it in place because the size of the output is going to be half in this case. So what's going to happen is there's a packet which is the input, there's a packet which is the output, it's going to be half the size of the input because you always do like one packet per work function, even if you are decimating. And then that means you have different circuits. So because this is a decimation, this is basically being the sink of one circuit and it sends it back, and it's being the source of this other circuit. So that's the way you deal with decimation. How do you deal with one-to-many connections? Because the idea is not to pay for things you are not using all the time. So doing things in place is great for one-to-one connections. Of course, you cannot do it here. And the idea is rather than to send the packet, you cannot copy it out to two different locations. You send just a reference. So you are sending a reference to these two blocks. It's a read-only reference. So this also cannot work in place. They read from the input, which is just a read-only reference, and they write onto an output packet, which has been recycled from here. And then what happens is, because of the way the structures for this reference are organized, the last block which keeps alive the reference, when it destroys it, it's supposed to return the packet to wherever it needs to go to be recycled. So that's the way you can deal with more complicated flow graphs by still using this idea of packets. I've gone and spent a few months working on these ideas, and I've implemented something I call QSDR. The Q is for quantum, of course. This is up in GitHub maybe since a month ago or so. And I'm doing this in Rust. I'm using async, so this is the same as Future SDR, but that's just the same commonality. The rest looks quite different, I think. But most importantly, and this is how I really began this project, in this QSDR repository, there are some benchmarks comparing GnuRadio 3.10, 4.0, and Future SDR, and this QSDR implementation. So you can see where things are regarding performance. This is highly experimental at the moment, highly work in progress. Next thing, custom schedulers. This is like a huge topic, right? 4.0 supports custom schedulers. Future SDR supports custom schedulers. And QSDR also. So this is my approach at custom schedulers, because I wasn't really too happy with the way 4.0 or Future SDR are approaching this idea of custom schedulers. And the reason is, yes, you can write your own scheduler, but it's kind of hard. Before this project, I haven't written any custom schedulers for 4.0 or Future SDR. And it's hard. Now I've written some simple ones. You basically need to know like the internals of how the SDR runtime you are dealing with works. You are basically calling some functions or something about the API of that particular SDR runtime to write your scheduler. And that makes them not so easy to write. On the other hand, on QSDR, these schedulers are based on Rust streams, which is a concept I will explain in a second. And this makes them completely independent of the SDR framework, completely independent of anything. So these schedulers are things which run Rust streams. Those could be anything else. They do not need to do SDR or DSP or anything. So it's like a more general concept. If you want, if your custom scheduler really needs to, it might dig in the internals of what's going on that is SDR related. But if not, it doesn't need to do. It's the same as 3.10. 3.10 uses the Linux kernel scheduler. It's tasks, right? Processes or threads. And Linux doesn't know anything about SDR. So it's the same kind of idea, but without using the operating system. So quick primer on Rust streams. A stream is an asynchronous object which can produce some sequence of values. And in this example, this is a stream iterator which is going to produce the values 1, 2, and 3. And basically, we have the object, we call it next method, and every time we call it, it returns us one value. So it returns 1, then it returns 2, it returns 3. And the next time we call next, there are no more values, so it returns none, saying, I'm finished. There is nothing more that I can give you. And something important here is this await. And that means if you are familiar with await in any language which supports async, this means that at this point, the stream might not be ready to give us some value. So we are kind of waiting for it. And if this is a task, then some other piece of code might decide to run some other task while we are waiting for this, without the intervention of the operating system scheduler. You can imagine a more elaborated example where this stream might produce 1, 2, and 3, but rather than immediately, it waits for 1 second between each of the values. So when I call await, I'm going to block for 1 second, and maybe some other code in my application runs. That's the idea. So in QSDR, each block has a work function. It is an async function because it needs to wait for the input to be available. So it's the same as here. We await, and that's the reason it's async. The work function processes, in general, one input quantum to produce one output quantum. So it's like one quantum per work call. And then it returns either run, which means call me again. I can do more work. That's like the usual thing. Or it says done. As I'm finished, maybe I'm a file source, I've reached the end, I'm a head block, I've already reached my count, or maybe there's a fatal error. Those are the three things that can happen. A QSDR block, once you have it connected in the flow graph, is converted to a stream, and each time you call next on the stream, next is going to call the work function once, and it returns you either an error or nothing. And the difference between run or done, you have it on this none versus some difference. So it either says, I'm really finished, or it says, I've done some work. I don't have any output to give you, like any number. I give you just, I've done some work. And you could call next again and expect more work to happen. So that's kind of where streams appear as a natural concept when you are thinking of scheduling work functions. Then a QSDR scheduler is just some code that calls multiple streams, either in parallel or in one thread or in any specific order. And those streams might be anything. The natural concept of streams appears when you are thinking about channels, which are ubiquitous in Rust. So if you have a channel, there is like a transmitter, a receiver object, and then you send some data and you get it here. And of course, receiving is asynchronous. It is like a wait receive because maybe the transmitter hasn't sent the data yet. And the receiver is a stream object because you can keep receiving messages until the transmitter is done and decides to close the channel. So any code you have, like a web application framework, which is designed to run multiple channels in parallel, you can use it as a QSDR scheduler, and there will be an example. There's nothing custom about QSDR schedulers. And I think that makes them way easier to write. Something which is very useful to write simple schedulers is stream combinators. The idea of stream combinators is some operation which takes some streams and produces another stream. So let's think about if we have two streams which produce either nothing or an error. And the way this is written in Rust is this result empty type or an error. If I have these two streams, I can produce a new stream whose next method means call the first stream and get something. If it doesn't produce an error, call the second stream and get something. And if it doesn't produce an error, then that's what your next function did. If some of those produced an error, that's the error you return. Basically, you are trying to receive two empty messages, and if there's an error, you really fail when you see the error. And this is called sequence two because it's basically like run these two blocks always. First block work, second block work, and there are many situations in which you would like to do so because it makes sense for the flow graph. And yeah, there is sequence three, sequence four, etc. to combine more blocks. There is also a helper function which is called run, and it takes a stream and it produces a future. A future is an asynchronous value, so you will wait on it and it returns you something. This run is going to call the stream until it is done or until it produces an error. Thinking again of the message receiver, it's basically going to drain the message receiver by receiving all messages until an error or until there are no more messages. And this is the way you run a flow graph. Basically, you call run on your blocks or combinations of blocks to get them to work until they say they are done, because something is done and it's saying that it's not going to produce any more output, right? And so the block cannot have any more input, and so it is done as well. And this run function is usually the top level for a scheduler on its thread. Coding example, just to give you an idea of how friendly or ugly the code it is, I want to dwell on a couple specific points. So in here, we are defining a type for the buffer. This is like a shorthand to avoid writing too much. It's the same as using in C++. And of course, we have like custom buffers in QSDR because everyone has. And this is like the basic cache line buffer for floating point 32. Here we are defining our buffer. So we create an iterator which is going to instantiate number buffers, so four buffers of 4096 floats, each of them. But this